Welcome to the podcast. It's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist, the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee, back as your host.
Thank goodness.
With our head coach, Chad Zimmerman.
Hi, everybody.
And our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hello, everyone just sighed relief. Nate's not doing it.
I think you did pretty well, Nate. And we're going to recap Single Track 6. We're a number of days removed now from the event. This is my first day back in the office, and I'm just putting in a partial time. If you didn't listen to the previous podcasts, you'd owe yourself a favor to do so. This podcast, at least, would make a whole lot more sense if you did that. But we did a six-day mountain bike stage race in British Columbia called Single Track 6.
Sort of.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
We were there.
Yeah.
For five of the days.
And anyways, the intent was to do the full six days, and we shared our learnings after every stage that we did all throughout. We unfortunately didn't make it to stage six through a series of unfortunate events. Do we want to wrap up what those are really quick? Nate, do you want to start off?
Let's do it quick because I know everyone's probably already heard it, but I broke my frame on stage one. Chad got cramps at it every other day, and then Jonathan smashed his head in the ground on stage five, and we left a day early, drove like through the night in a U-Haul, which is, hey, pro tip, if you ever can't rent a car big enough for your bike bags,
because we had worked.
Yeah, we had extra suitcases for the podcast equipment, and we rented a U-Haul, and it was cheaper to go point to point with a U-Haul than a rental car, because a lot of times rental cars too, they charge you more if you drop it off, but U-Haul, they expect it. So we sat three, just all snug up front, and we drove, and I think we got, what, like 3.5 hours sleep?
Three,
yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and a day's in.
Yeah, or less. Yep. Yeah.
I think I would have rather slept in the U-Haul.
Yeah. And then,
yeah, that could have done that.
And then we, and flew right out of there. The crash that I had was pretty rough. And I just wanted to send a quick thank you to everybody that's been sending in messages of getting well soon and such. Very kind.
It's amazing how many people ask me how you're doing.
Yeah.
Because I think they didn't want to bug you, but.
Yeah, very kind. So thank you.
Everyone. Can we hear how you're doing?
Yeah, it's pretty rough. I haven't been able to sleep. And part of that is because where I hit on the temporal lobe, it controls a lot of the, that's at least a region where a lot of the negative emotions, I guess, are controlled. So like fear, anxiety, that sort of thing, sadness, that sort of thing. So I've been like overcome with random waves of emotion that are pretty powerful for no particular reason. So that's been difficult to deal with. And I'm not sure if that's been keeping me from sleep or if it's just been compounding on top of that, but I haven't been able to sleep. I have not night terrors like I'm being chased with a chainsaw or something, but I just am so terrified for no particular reason that I can't sleep. So that's been pretty rough to deal with. Then the body itself is pretty sore. Went to the doctor, got checked out, didn't end up going to the hospital to get further x-rays or anything. I don't feel that that's necessary at all. Just banged up, bruised up, and the head's a little messed up. But,
so have you been diagnosed with a concussion then?
I have. That I have been officially diagnosed with.
So we talked about it when I had my concussion and you had your, and now you have one right now. Is Chad, have you ever had a concussion from a bike crash?
Not from a bike crash, but yes.
Yeah. What was yours from?
Jiu-jitsu.
Oh.
Shot to the back of the head.
Ouch. Yeah. So a common...
Coach Chad just got even gnarlier in everyone's minds right now.
Yeah, because of that swole picture of him on Instagram.
Yeah.
Everyone's scared of Coach Chad.
Yeah.
But something for everyone to know that if you do hit your head, and I didn't know this until I got a concussion, is that it can mesh with your emotions. And mine was different. I wasn't afraid, but I'd just be like, I'd get angry for like no reason. My poor wife, she'd say something. And you actually told me, Jonathan... I talked about it afterwards, like, yeah, that can happen. And I was like, oh, and I apologize to my wife, but it was hard to control that. I just got like over nothing. I'd get not like super raging, but I would just be like, oh, what's going on?
Yeah.
And you're manifesting it differently with your anxiety and depression and stuff.
Because it's totally not like me. I'm usually not a worrier type of a person, you know, but I guess the point is every concussion is different. I'm sure Chad, your concussion was different. The symptoms you dealt with.
I don't remember the after effects. It was quite a while ago.
Yeah. So
the concussion. But the bigger point is just like, when you hit your head, you might think that you're fine, but you're really not fine. And the other point I want to make, who did you see?
I can't remember her name. The same
Dr. Albertson?
Yes.
Okay. So she is a sports doctor, I forget what the correct title is in Reno. She told me this, I think I mentioned on the podcast, that you get a concussion and while you're in that like state and still healing, if you get another concussion, 50% mortality rate. And then I think I told
within
you-
within that range of when you're recovering. Yeah,
it's like a concussion on top of a concussion.
Yep. And I was like, we talked about it. I was like, oh, does that mean if we're at 2% chance, it now is at 3% chance? And I talked to her again. She goes, no, 50% chance of dying.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy smokes. But she said, the good news is that after you healed, you have no increased risk of dying.
Right.
So the point is, if all you cyclists out there, if you get a concussion, go see a doctor and then don't do anything that could hit your head until you're quote unquote cleared by
don't
your doctor.
Finish a race.
Which from what I'm reading is quite a long time. I mean, it can take up to, I think, 6 weeks I saw.
Yeah, it can be very short. As short as 2 weeks. It can be longer. There are concussions that I think that we tend to blanket it, you know, as one thing, and really it's an injury that can just vary so widely, and we just probably don't know enough about it yet, you know. So
we're learning.
Yeah, we are, and this is one thing that's pretty scary. I found out that I did not crash with 3K to go,
and it wasn't an easy spot either.
Oh man,
no, I crashed somewhere toward the top of the timed descent. Somebody told me. Apparently, I told them I was fine and getting back on the bike, and I lied.
You told him you had a concussion. You said, I have a concussion, but I'm fine.
Yeah, I said, I said I was concussed.
And what's particularly spooky about this is there was quite a bit of technical terrain left to go. Several kilometers of it.
Just built into Jonathan's
DNA. Well, and the strange thing is, so we're looking at the data on the head unit, and it doesn't pause when, like, I don't have mine set to auto pause, but I think it still does, like, smart recording, the Wahoo element, so that, like, if you're stopped, it's not going to record any of that, basically, because I don't see a spot where it, you know, fell down for a long time. But there is my time through the time descent is extremely long, which makes sense that's where it happened. And then also, I mean, I was riding at like 200 average, like 250, 260 watts thereafter in that weird, like, I guess, subconscious state.
You're still racing, yeah.
And the only moment that I remember like coming to was there was a bridge and I was on like a narrow one and I was partially on it. And I thought, oh, I should probably not ride this because I'm a little loopy. And I got off and I walked it across. And that's just something really scary when you mention that you can hit your head again. The nature of mountain biking means that you won't have people at all at every part of the course, right? And it's a pretty scary thing to think of that, you know, I could have knocked my head again thereafter and it could have been really
bad. They did that where you crashed was actually where people were, though. So two things. One, what should you have done?
Oh, it's
differently.
So, I mean, I should have. Are you talking post-crash?
Yes. Like if...
Yeah, if I was to crash that hard, I should not have finished the race.
Yes, and then two, if you see someone, one of your buddies crash that hard, and they're like, I have a concussion, but I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm not blaming the listener or whoever saw you,
right?
But just if you're going with your buddies, like, I'm fine, don't let them continue.
They aren't fine.
Yeah, exactly, because...
It's not up to them.
Jonathan now, this is my point, is now that he's come back, he's like, I should have done that.
No,
I have a kid, I shouldn't have finished the race.
Yeah.
But in the time... He was like, you didn't even remember it, but you finished it. So you're not thinking clearly. Obviously, you smashed your head in the ground.
100%. So that's another, I guess that my point was saying that the nature of mountain biking with racing like that is, you know, you can't have people along the course all the time. This just hammers home the importance of, you know, this is a race scenario. It's kind of like an edge case, but when you're riding, just out riding with people, ride with people. It could really help you out. And
I like to also do trails where people are, when I'm by solo, but there's people there.
Yeah.
Right. So like we have a White's Creek kind of loop here. And
hikers, other riders, runners.
Yeah. You'll see someone every like 5 minutes. And if you crash, maybe 10, 20 minutes, someone will come by.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm on the mend, and I've not said I will be back on the bike by this date. I haven't even worried about putting that date, any type of a date on that. There's no point in doing that. For me, it's just taking time to where I can manage things, manage just normal life again.
So. When was the last time that you crashed hard on a mountain bike?
Like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's constant little crashes, but I mean a hard crash.
Yeah, like
a real crash.
Yep. Yeah, like 4 years ago.
I'm trying to describe to people how steep this was, and I think I have it. Okay. So go on your local trail and go down it, and after 5 seconds, hit the brakes. Can you stop? It's not steep enough.
Yeah.
Find a hill where you, after 5 seconds, if you like try to hit the brakes and stop, you cannot stop. That is how steep it was.
Controlled slide.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you can slide down, but you can't physically stop yourself?
Yeah, it was pretty, it was some real mountain biking up there.
That was real, yeah.
And I looking back on it, especially being removed from it even more, just so grateful for that experience. I thought the trails, especially in Roslyn, were just incredible. Oh, yeah.
In retrospect, I'm so glad we went. The trail, the riding was amazing. Riding.
Yeah, yeah.
Just I prefer that it weren't quite an enduro race and were, you know, more more like the cross country race promise and the one they hear they're reverting back to the format. But you know, is what it is, and I think all of us became better riders as a result.
Yeah, they said that it was the most difficult single track six ever.
Yeah,
I don't know how long this thing's been going for, but at least 7 years.
And it's been known as like one of the most, if not the most difficult mountain bike stage races anyway.
Yeah.
And they raised the bar this year. They heard we were coming, so they raised the bar, right?
It was it was still terrifying. I wish it was a little less technical. Mm-hmm. I still want to do a 6 day stage race, guys.
Yeah,
you're on, buddy.
Breck Epic 2019.
And so you're eyeing, and Chad mm-hmm. and I are thinking that the 3 day sounds real nice instead of the six.
You could be my Swannies for 3 days.
Yeah, that I think I'd rather ride 6 days than do that.
Burn.
We got a few questions that I just wanted to go through really quick on this. From Logan, he says, amazing product, 5 stars, and love the new app. And he's talking about the new beta, so new mobile 2.0 coming soon. Exciting stuff. He says, thanks for the amazing single track six recap and race preparation podcasts. They were fantastic. After listening to your experiences, I've registered for the 2018 event. Sweet. So we didn't scare everybody off. Good. So that's good to know. I have a quick equipment question. I have a Norco Revolver hardtail. That's a cross country race specific hardtail for those that don't know, with SRAM XX1. That means it's the 1x11 drivetrain that goes from 10 to 42 in the back, not the Eagle stuff that saved me on the final days. In your opinion, would you even consider doing this race with a hardtail bike, or do you think a full suspension bike is a must? If yes, what front and rear travel would you suggest? I would prefer to keep my hardtail as CX and not XC as a primary focus. So I assume that he uses his hardtail as for cyclocross as well.
Sounds like it.
And then he says, thanks. Hope you're feeling better and getting the rest you need, Jonathan. Thanks, man. What do you guys think?
Well, so it's tricky because it's different every year. They change it. So you don't know. And this is what we emailed the race director, someone else who did it, and someone else here, 2 years ago, they did it, said the race was terrifying. And then last year, someone that we know did it, and they said it was not bad at all.
Yeah, I think they're going back to the promised cross-country format that a hardtail would probably be workable.
Yeah, and you know, I even saw a lot of people on hardtails.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was the best tool for the job, though. I think those people probably paid a price for it.
Yeah.
I would actually email the race and say, hey, what do you think? I got this one. But I wouldn't do... If you want to race it, I wouldn't do something with a lot of travel.
Yeah, I think that for this course, I think that you guys had the ideal bike. So you were on the Yeti SB45, but it has 114 mils of travel in the rear and 130 or 40, depending on what you like to run up front. And I feel like that was an ideal bike for this race.
Yeah, I don't have a wide basis for comparison, but I was really happy with that bike.
All the really fast guys, though, had bikes like yours, Jonathan, cross-country 100.
Well, full suspension cross-country. I have 120 up front and 100 in the rear. Some had 100, and those guys struggled. The top guys that were doing really well, they had a little more, except for
still
Justin
full suspension
Lindy.
Too, though. Not
yeah, they did. And they were all, I was speaking with them on the way back on the shuttles, and all of them were very grateful to have a full suspension bike and not a hardtail. There's one guy that was up there, I think in like sixth or seventh, and he was on a hardtail, and he said it was really rough. Now, the one thing that you have to understand with bike selection is that your abilities can help you overcome deficiencies of a bike and then also magnify the efficiencies of that bike. So if you are a very capable rider and you pick a hardtail, you may just have to know that it'll require more energy to get through rough terrain, not just downhill, but also pedaling. But a lot of this had fire road climbs. And thinking back to it, if you had a light, really stiff bike, you would do better on that terrain. So it's really all about what type of strengths you have in relation to your bike rather than the bike to the course specifically. That there's more than just one variable there. I personally would not go without a full suspension bike. And I think for me and my abilities, 120 up front and 100 in the rear was perfect. If I had anything more for my abilities, I think that it would have been overkill. For most people, I think a bike like you guys were on was the ticket to have.
So. Yeah, another podcast listener who has a PhD emailed me about the idea of, I think he called it deja vu or something, but the idea with fear and you're inside of a race, and when you haven't seen something, that's when the fear hits you. And in my experience, we did so much practicing and I got so much better at downhills. And then when we saw the really, really steep stuff, I'd never seen anything like that before. Yeah. Maybe like on a video, like a Red Bull video. And then like all the skills went away.
Makes sense.
It's just, it's interesting. And if I would have known that it was that steep, I think it would have been, we could have practiced more like a double black diamond at North Star. I think they have stuff down there that is as technical, sticks and stones.
Yeah.
That's the name of the trail. You know, that's a gnarly trail.
Breaks your bones.
Yep.
And one thing to bring up to that really quick, if you are in a situation where you might find yourself overwhelmed by the terrain, that's when you would be really grateful to have a bike with more travel because it gives you a bigger wiggle room for error and more relaxed geometry. Most race hardtails are going to have just be more punishing. And if you kind of lock up, then it'll punish you really bad. Michael says, thank you for doing the podcast over single track six. And he says in parentheses five, I did my first multi-day mountain bike race this year, so I could relate to a lot that you spoke about. Now that you have done something like this, do you think you'll be changing your recommendations for training or creating new training plans focused on multi-day racing? We talked about this a bit when we were up there.
I felt one of the things that I got wrong with my training is that I didn't do any big gear work or any slow cadence work. And I attributed my cramping to that. When I found out, though, that wasn't exactly the case. I simply paced a little too fast that first day because all I did was dial things back a little bit on days 3 and 5. And it wasn't any less work or any less severe terrain. And everything went very differently by just holding back a little bit. Yes, Nate called it.
I was going to say that, but So I have experienced cramps too at Carson City. And when I knew you were behind me, I was pushing super hard.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And then you knew I was behind you somewhere. I mean, maybe you don't want to admit it, but something in your brain said.
I knew you were back there, but I didn't. At that point, I was in survival mode. It was just getting to the finish line because I had a lot of doubt.
No, before your cramps. That's what I mean. Like,
Because
you passed me.
Before, it was really, I didn't know how to pace it. I really didn't. I was just going as hard as I thought I needed to go in order to stay upright, to be able to get over some of the things I needed to get over, to be able to manage the downhills. Mm-hmm. It really was just me trying harder than I could actually, sustain or maintain.
You know, and something, even though you were caught behind a ton of traffic in the beginning, it was steep. And you were using a lot. Oh. And also when you're going slower like that.
Hugely wasteful.
You use a huge amount of energy, right? So that would make sense that basically, even though it was slow, you still started out super hard just to be able to manage through that terrain.
Yeah, from the start, that race. I mean, that was 90 minutes of everything I could do. So it just completely blew me up.
What we all said and we agreed on, and you mentioned this before on the podcast, Chad, is that we think the rule of thumb is to have, if you're going to like, think of how much TSS you're going to have during those 6 days. And let's say it's 1,000 TSS. Make sure that you can handle 500 TSS weeks going in. So, and then you can do your taper and go to 1,000. But make sure it's not more than double, right? If you could handle 600 TSS weeks, that'd even be better.
Yeah. Seriously, even doubling the TSS is pretty lofty. So going from 500 TSS weeks up to 1,000 for a big overload block or a big race block like this is still going to come at a big cost.
Well, yeah. And the recovery is going to be huge, right? But I mean, maybe that's the minimum, right? Like if you're doing 200 TSS weeks.
Based on what we've done so far, I think it's a safe ballpark.
Now, since I only had one day, ST1, I've been doing my own little big riding camp here in Reno. And I did a 280 TSS day. Then I did I'm doing the Chad Timmerman approach of every other day, a 220 TSS day and a 200 TSS day just today. Mm-hmm. And the first day of the race, we had 200 TSS. It is mountain biking in that race was so much harder. Like the 200 TSS. So my point is, the 200 TSS of the mountain bike race, I was way more thrashed than 220 on the road.
That was a very demanding TSS. It wasn't, I mean, it's incomparable. You can't say TSS on the mountain bike versus TSS on a long road ride.
Exactly.
Two very different things.
So mine are all on the road. But my point is, so if you're going to do, I'm just using the 500 and 1,000 because it's easy math. don't think you can do 500 all road TSS and then get into 1,000 mountain bike TSS and think it's not going to hurt a ton.
Apples and oranges.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Something that I noticed looking back on it too, on stage five, and keep in mind, massive grain of salt. This, all of this could be fabricated in my mind. We don't know. But stage five for me, so stage four was my low point in terms of like back-to-back stress and feeling like really exhausted. I have a feeling
that was a lot of people's low point.
Yeah, stage four was my low point. Stage five, however, I was doing much better than a lot of people on the climbs. Relatively speaking to the people from previous days, I felt like I was doing better. I attribute that, a lot of that performance on the climbs, to pacing. I felt like that was a weak point for a lot of people. Once again, just a lot of people don't understand pacing.
Tell you what though, 6 days in a row, you figure you're pacing out pretty fast. It becomes of vital importance.
That's a good point. Yeah, by force. So I felt like I had just reached, of course, right, when you crash out, but I felt like I had just reached the point where I was reaching kind of a level of stasis, so to speak, and I wasn't getting any worse. If anything, I felt better on stage five than stage four. So it's interesting how your body reacts. Another question, or more a tip to us. He says, I have a tip. His name is Jonathan. He has a great name. He says he talked about using camelbacks and it sloshing around. If you take your bladder after it's filled with water, turn it upside down and suck out all the air, makes for a much quieter, less sloshing ride or run. I think all of us do that. I mean, I know I do that.
Yeah, I do. I learned that running. It's really miserable running.
Yeah. So it certainly helps, but if you have a pack that doesn't hold close to you or doesn't have a good retention system, it still is going to slosh around because it's weight that isn't firmly fixed. So, and I don't suck it out or turn it upside down like that. I actually just, when I fill it up, I just depress the air out right there and then close the lid. I don't know. That's plenty of ways to do it. But yeah, make sure you never have air in your camelbacks. That'll always help out. And I don't think we did that. So just going to hold us accountable for a few things now, guys. We're going to go through our pre-race preparation and how we executed on race day. And we're going to go through that and just share any insights of if we feel like it was a good thing or a bad thing. First, on the training side of things, I feel like the skills training paid off massively for all of us.
Yeah, for sure.
Even on stage one, even though you only did one stage, stage was way gnarlier than anything you had ridden, I'm sure.
Yeah, until was that like an eight? I was doing great and being aggressive, and then I crashed because it was like a gravel 52% down grade or something. I don't know. Yeah. But yes, Lee, it was amazing.
Yeah, without that skills training, I would have done either a lot of walking or a lot of crashing. One of the two.
Sure. Or both, like somebody.
Yeah, it was really helpful. I feel like that was a smart thing for us to do. Even if this race goes back to its more XC roots, like they're saying, in the next year, I still can't think of a single XC race where that training that we did wouldn't be beneficial.
Oh, yeah.
So it was just really, really invaluable. Helpful. So heat training. I know on the first day, it was still pretty warm on the first day.
Yeah, we had some warm days overall, and then just some warm sections, like those fire road climbs where you're directly in the sun and you're working, 250, 280, 300 watts stretches, no wind whatsoever. The heat was a factor if you weren't adjusted to it. And I felt pretty in control of things at any point.
Chad, your Garmin said that it was at 95 was the high on the first day.
Yeah, see,
it was the hottest
day. And that didn't even really register. Yeah, it wasn't like, it's so hot, I'm falling apart. It just wasn't a concern. I mean, it was obvious. I could feel it, but it wasn't a factor.
I feel like contrasting this experience to Carson City Off-Road, pat on the back to all three of us
for
making sure that we were adapted to heat. Mm-hmm. I noticed a lot of people suffering during single track six with the heat, a lot of people, and it reared its ugly head toward the end of the stages, and it made it so that I was able to pick people off relatively easily.
Carson City, I felt like I was cooking.
Yeah.
Like I was a piece of bacon.
Yeah.
But then this one, I felt it was hot, but I wasn't like, I didn't feel overheated once.
With Carson, it felt like a distinctly could not offload the heat.
Yes.
Whereas with this, it wasn't a problem.
Two, with my power on the climbs, it wasn't, Carson City started to go down, 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 down. This didn't do it. So we have some evidence that we were better adapted.
It helped. Training stress coming in. For me personally, I don't feel like stepping up the TSS. I'm sure it would have helped, but for me personally, with the gearing that I had going before I switched over to Eagle, which we'll cover this in a bit, things we would have changed with equipment, but I feel like doing a lot of lower cadence stuff would have been more beneficial, but I just had no way of knowing that those climbs were that steep. And that would have been like, because that's something that on camera, it just doesn't show.
No.
When you also, notoriously, if you're doing trails and you're creating a route beforehand and you're looking at how steep it is, it's notoriously wrong. There are points where it says it's like 90 degrees, you know? So like it's tough to do with that, but I just didn't know how steep it was. If I would have known that, then I would have gotten used to more locate and stuff. But that's the only thing that I would have really changed with my training, I guess.
Yeah, regardless of what I did prior, the day on, day off approach kind of skewed everything. So I think the amount of training I had in me was sufficient for sure, and even more so considering that I took a rest day every other day.
Yeah.
I did a taper week, and then I had a one-day stage race. And at the end, too, I was thinking, okay, Nate, you have 5 more days of this, so don't blow your load right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was fine for one day of semi-hard racing.
That's it, yeah. Logistics. So we did the shuttle service, which was helpful in a lot of ways. It was nice to just have somebody be able to drive you back from the stages when it was an hour-long transfer. That was really nice. There were some downsides too, though, because we didn't have a rental car and we were in towns that were pretty remote, or it was just difficult to get around. And the last thing that I wanted to do was to walk through a hilly town, right, after a stage race.
Quite hilly too.
And so that was difficult. I feel like a rental car would have been helpful, but at the same time, could have been more tough. What do you guys think?
I would rather have a rental car, but with all of our stuff, we had 3 bike bags then
we would have had to have a big cargo type van.
2 extra. And that would get really expensive.
Yeah.
Right. That would have been $1,500 for the week or so.
Yeah.
No, it just so happened we had really good shuttle drivers and they did it quite well too. There wasn't any point where we had to wait for very long. Yeah. So they did a good job, but we were still at their mercy. We were still on their schedule. And that didn't suit me very well.
Yeah, just based off of for the event itself, I was blown away at how seamless the transportation went in terms of getting our bikes to places, getting us to places, and getting our drop bags to places.
They didn't make a mistake.
It was so easy too. I was just really, really grateful for that. That was awesome. I do think that I would have preferred a rental car in a lot of ways, but
yeah. It's the post-race thing when we're like, it's 2 o'clock and we're like, oh, let's go get food.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, it's a mile and it's all uphill.
Yeah.
And I was fine, but
yeah.
You two guys, I mean.
It was rough.
Yeah.
Lodging, we ended up picking what the race hotel did. I think that was probably a good move. The first one was, I think we could have made a better choice.
Just one bit of advice, make sure it has air conditioning.
Oh,
that's
geez.
It.
That's it.
If it's hot. Yeah.
And that's what I would do going back into these things is just calling and making sure that there's air conditioning. Yeah. And also making sure that there's, there were the first.
One had AC.
We picked the wrong one.
One didn't.
Yeah. And I feel like the 2 things that I would verify just looking back at this during a stage race is I would want to make sure that the amenities are not just there. So I looked up on Yelp and then on the internet and I was like, oh, cool. There's restaurants and everything else. It didn't take into consideration that it was seasonal because it's a ski resort for the first bit. Everything was closed.
Everything.
Yep.
So
the same thing. I was like, oh, there's all these great restaurants by us. All of them were closed.
Coffee shop right around the corner.
Yep. Closed. Nope.
Yeah. So that's
taxi
one
service.
Thing.
No.
One taxi for the whole city.
Yeah. So verify that beforehand. I would absolutely do that. Recon. Is there any? I mean, we looked at YouTube videos and everything else, but is there anything that we could have done better on the recon?
The YouTube videos lied.
They did.
they lied to my face.
Yeah, they were not.
Wide angles of GoPros flatten things out, don't they?
They look very easy on YouTube.
Yeah. I don't know what else we could have done. I mean, I guess because even after talking to some locals about the trails, especially with mountain biking, everyone delivers the experience of a trail through their own perspective, and it may not be your perspective. So it's tough to know what grain of salt to keep handy when you're doing that.
One thing that I would have done different, this maybe isn't a recon issue, but I would have, I think I mentioned this already, is ridden longer downhills. I didn't realize the toll that some of the harsher downhills take when you extend them out to 10, 15, 20 minutes.
And there's no break and really rough climbs between.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty tough. Basically, looking at this, I think the best way to prepare for this single track 6 would have been to go to the Enduro World Series and race it on a cross country bike nonstop.
There it is.
Every round. I think that would have been the best thing to do. Equipment. Let's go over that really quick. Nate, would you have changed anything? We went over and you can go on to blog.trainerroad.com and you can see everything that we had. What would you have changed about your setup, Nate?
Not a broken frame.
Yes.
And I would have done beefier tires. I still don't think I would have gone all the way to Chad's
Minion.
Yeah, just because of the climbs, I think it would take too much out of me and it would be even more.
Yeah.
But I think I was on the Racing Ralphs.
Yeah.
And I think I could have gone dual Knobby Nicks maybe.
Mm-hmm. And I think that would have been good.
That would have been a good probably tire for the good combination between rolling resistance and a little bit grippier.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same page. I think I did a little overkill with the tires, but if I'm going to make a mistake in terms of equipment choice, that's one I'm happy to make. A little more grip, a little extra weight, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, there were some spots on stage five, that really loose chute that I'm thinking of, where I actually thought going through that, it'd be nice to have Chad's tires right now. So
yeah, and see, that's it too. There would be some situations where they were exactly the right tire. And if that means I got to pack them around on stuff where they're a little heavy elsewhere, so be it.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about this even on Instagram recently. I responded to somebody and let them know that tire choice is so individual. A lot of people just assume, like, you know, if it's XC, it's an Icon. If it's this, it's a Minion, you know, and honestly, it should be so individual. Like, and you should experiment with tires, find out what works. And then you also should pick a tire that that makes your bike handle the way that you're comfortable with. Above all, because then you'll be able to actually be comfortable and really ride how you want to ride. As your skills increase, you can get away with less. But
I find besides the expense part isn't fun, but it's kind of fun trying different tires because you can really feel like I thought it was a little bit of BS before, but when you put on a lighter tire, lower rolling resistance versus like a Minion, and just in the parking lot, you're like, whoa, there's a little motor in my bike.
Yeah,
and then with the stick, and you can feel it all the way through. And then with cross, 200 cross bikes, having the different tires,
huge
getting to like a, it's kind of cool. So it's like having, it's like a bullseye on the Avengers, and he's got an arrow for everything, right?
Yeah, test them all out. Only thing I would change is gearing. I would have gone with Eagle from the beginning.
Oh, I could have actually gone with a smaller front chainring.
Oh yeah, you were mentioning a 28.
Yeah, I would have gone with a 28 on that course.
There were times, I know this sounds crazy to people right now, but there were times where a 30 tooth front and a 50 tooth rear was still dragging me down to 40 RPM, 50 RPM.
Yeah, and you're 145 pounds.
Yeah,
some of that
with a threshold around 300.
So you can imagine Chad and I being 185 with even the same gearing and a heavier bike too.
Yeah, it's a lot of man meat to cart around.
We're like 50 pounds heavier than you going up the hill.
Yeah, so it was so steep, guys. I know we've said that a lot, but it was just
nobody
so
knows.
Steep.
Yeah, they don't believe us.
It was just so steep.
I think the 30-50 combo worked just fine for me. It was just right.
Camelback was
because there were some downhills where I wanted that 10 tooth cock.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, fire road, mind you.
Oh, yeah, there were spots where I spun out on stage four.
Just let it roll, though.
Yeah, well, I was getting caught, so I felt kind of slow. But I feel like the Camelback was totally a good choice.
Oh, yeah.
Only because I was hitting the aid stations. And I don't think any of my stops took more than a minute. They were quick because I'd hand them my bottle. They'd fill it up while I grabbed a couple potato chips or just something to kill the time, basically. And then I was off again. So
yeah, and that's a good
kind of nice.
If you were planning on hitting the aid stations, I don't think it would have been necessary. Nate drinks more than a Camel. So that's a little different. But yeah, you bring up a really good point. And we did cover that already. But if you're planning on hitting the aid stations, this race at least had well-stocked aid stations too.
So, yeah, they did really well.
I would have preferred to have, my bike frame doesn't have it, but two large bottles and just use those. I'd rather have no backpack.
Yes.
And then maybe an extra bottle in my jersey that I could then switch out that I wouldn't be reaching all the time. And it's also a little bit easier to refill the aid station than the backpack. Yeah. And it's a little bit cooler too. That's in the weight's lower. I can't do that on my Yeti. Yeah. So.
I got to a point, though, pulling the bottle out of my back pocket that was almost as easy as pulling it out of a bottle cage.
Yeah,
so it got to be a pretty fluid movement.
Pretty easy. I noticed I drank more and more water every day. I was drinking more water and more, I should say more liquid because I was drinking other stuff too. It was interesting. So don't know what that means. Do with it what you will. Execution on nutrition. Would you guys change anything about the nutrition that you had?
Not a thing. In fact, something I noticed is on the two shuttle rides we did take, and you know, I'm as bad about this as anybody, but the throat clearing that tells you what you just ate probably doesn't exactly jive with your body. There's some small, albeit very small, allergic reaction going on. We had oatmeal and peanut butter and dried fruit and ancient grains sort of mix. That stuff agreed with me so perfectly that I had none of that.
Yeah, I didn't have any digestive issues, and I feel like I was sufficiently fueled. Yep. Not a thing I would change. And if you want to see exactly what we use, just check it out, blog.trainerone.com.
I was all ready to do I had my 700 calorie breakfast and I brought a scale. I was going to weigh all my food and carbs the whole week just to for listeners to see you know, how many, if he's eating 600 carbs a day, how are his legs feeling?
He wanted to represent the obsessive side of things.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know what? Someone's got to do it. Jay, so.
Hey, more power
to you. Interesting to the people listening.
Yeah, it's true.
Hopefully some people are like, click off. But I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But speaking of which, it felt so bummed to be there every day. Chad come back and be like, that was the best day I've ever had on a bike. You would have nailed it. That was easy today for stage three.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting in this hot room.
That was the single best stage Nate could have done. I mean, the single best ride
stage
I think he could have done.
Stage three was incredible.
Sublime.
So, thanks, guys.
I still think that there would have been some spooky points. At least I had my most spooky points. But it was great.
For sure.
Strategy. So on execution, in terms of race strategy, pacing, I put down here, I said, well, we changed the way we paced. And I said, Nate, you should have gone full ham on day one, of course, since you were going to break your bike. And you knew that, of course, but, I feel like I paced well. There were so many parts on these courses. It was so steep where pacing just went out the window. I was just doing what I could to get up, but I started to find windows later on in this race. I started to be more efficient. I think day one, I was more worried about getting ahead constantly because of the bad start, and day two, same thing. But on stage three, four, and five, I really started to look for spots where I could carry momentum without wasting energy. And maybe I sacrificed a little bit of time, but I'd save more energy. And that was one thing that, I've instead of digging for speed, I was digging for efficiency. And in a normal cross country race, I'm constantly digging for speed. I'm looking for every foot on the course. I'm looking to maximize my momentum in one way or another, whether that be through pedaling or body English to be able to move the bike more efficiently through terrain. And in this case, I would change that with the stage race. I would be looking for ways to just be more efficient instead of looking for every second to increase that. Now, I'm sure if I was at the pointy end of the race, it would have been a different deal. But with where I was, I feel like that would have been a wise thing that probably would have added up to making me a little more fresh.
Yeah.
Chad, do you have anything? Or Nate? I mean,
yeah,
Nate's out.
You know, hindsight being what it is, I would have paced differently on day one. But honestly, on day one, I felt like I was pacing pretty conservatively. Just turned out that I just needed to dial it back slightly more because I got the pacing properly. About as good as I'm going to get it, I think, on days three and five.
Recovery? Any changing in strategy that you would do to recovery? Looking over at Nate, I don't know why.
The recovery that, what'd we use? Scratch?
Yeah.
Yeah, that, between that, and then I think we got our meal in us within about an hour.
We were pretty good about that.
I don't think we missed that by much if we did miss it.
Yeah.
So, and then the composition of that meal, didn't look at it too closely, just made sure it was a pretty balanced meal and everything seemed to go pretty well from there. But again, you know, I didn't do anything the following day. So if I botched my recovery, you know, the repercussions weren't all that severe.
Yeah. I would have spent more time with legs up and just doing nothing. I think that, you know, it doesn't seem like much, but recording the podcast and going through, you know, and having that to do, it added, like, if anything, just like the mental toll of things. It's certainly not the ideal way to recover for a stage race. I think we got other benefits out of that through analyzing our performance every day that probably helped, but
To a too hot hotel room didn't help at all.
That was tough. I'm sure, but if you're listening to this, chances are you're not going to be doing a stage race and recording a podcast every day. So this one doesn't necessarily apply. The principle that I'm getting at here, though, is just once again, after that race, I'd be looking at doing everything that I can to maximize the amount of time I'm recovering.
What was your best pre-race meal? Post-race meal, sorry.
Honestly, I don't even remember. I mean, I think one day we got pizza. That seemed to work pretty well.
Pizza? But again, that place was horrible.
The pizza. Are you talking in quality of food?
No, like what? I mean, what do you think that was, both like quality and like, you're like, wow, that was a great post-race meal.
No, outside of having the scratch stuff, I was pretty forgiving beyond that point. I figure if I had that in me, I'm at least that far ahead of the game because normally I don't even have that.
I feel like we went to a restaurant in Nelson. I got a big old burger. It was delicious.
Oh, yeah,
I got
that was
a salad beforehand that was very good. It was a well-balanced meal. It was delicious.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't think too hard about it. It wasn't about I need the best recovery food for the job here. It was I want a good, satisfying meal.
Yeah, we weren't breaking down macros. Chad and I weren't on this. And I feel like that would have added to the mental stress for me, for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like I stepped wrong at all with the post-race recovery meals.
The one that the Swanee me made that I liked was we cut up a fruit salad and then had whole wheat pasta.
That was actually...
So it was really easy to make. Yep. So that's why I'm bringing it up. It was, we got a papaya, blueberries, and a banana. Cut that up, mix it up, and then did a whole wheat pasta and just had like Newman's marinara sauce. Mm-hmm. Just boiled the spaghetti and put that on there. It's super easy to make. You can make it in any condo that has a stove.
Yeah.
And it's even easy to transfer. You probably get it most places in the world.
I mean, if you're camping, you could easily make that. All you're doing is boiling water, throwing in some noodles. Pretty mm-hmm. easy. So yeah, that was actually, thank you for
you wouldn't have to, well, it's because I made it, so I want to bring it up, but you wouldn't have to walk a mile uphill.
Yeah, exactly.
And then that's another thing though.
And there were leftovers too for round two later on.
Mm-hmm. Yep, but sitting at the restaurant, it took like, everything in Canada took like an hour for people to make. True. I don't know why,
yeah.
But they weren't in a hurry.
It's because they were busy cooking the meat however they wanted, not how we wanted
it. Yeah, another pro tip, in Canada, they don't cook like medium rare.
They yeah, when you ask for your burger medium rare, they kind of just cook it how they want it.
No, they said they cook it how they cook it.
Yeah, which is exceptionally well done.
Yes.
Yeah, at least well based on the three meals yeah. we had.
Including even the pizza was exceptionally well done. So
very well.
I guess, is there anything else that we would want to wrap up for this? An incredible event.
Just the post-recovery, just address, talked about, you know, had Jonathan done all 6 days and even just having done five, that the toll it exacts. I mean, even if you feel good 2 or 3 days after, mm-hmm. your body, chances are it's not fully recovered and ready to hit it hard again. Mm-hmm. So how you step back into your training, I mean, you just have to be particularly conscious of how you're feeling and how the workouts are going and be honest with yourself, because the last thing you want is to do, you know, a big block like that, shortchange your recovery and try to dive back into training and watch the rest of your season just decline.
So Chad, what do you think, and this is, it's going to be very individual and people have listened to their bodies, but just off the top of your head for Jonathan, if you were to do all 6 days,
yeah.
how many days do you think?
Just ballpark, I'd give a day of recovery for every day of racing. So at least 6 days worth. And it doesn't mean he has to do nothing over those 6 days. I think the first day or two, pretty close to nothing, mm-hmm. and then get back on the bike and do nothing any harder than maybe tempo work, like 70% of threshold. And just kind of go from there, see how it feels. Start to dose yourself with a little bit of intensity and get a feel for, you know, can I do this and still feel reasonably okay? See how that subsequent ride goes if you do dose it with a little bit of work. But in any case, be excessively cautious about it.
That feels pretty much perfect. What I would do if we weren't in the strange circumstances I am with the head injury and everything else. I feel like a really sound approach. One thing that I would add to that too is, don't rush back into technical terrain, just like you wouldn't rush back into threshold intervals. Don't rush back into something really technical, because remember, your whole body's fatigued. And especially in a race like this, you've been putting your mind and body through a lot trying to process all of that crazy terrain nonstop. So take your time. This could be a great time for you to work on simple, not dangerous grass drills, parking lot drills, that type of stuff. If you really have the need to get back into anything technical, you can start there.
This has also made me think that I want to do cross-country racing and nothing above that. Mm. And nothing with, quote, air quotes, cross-country like we just did.
Yeah.
So I've talked about this before, but I want to get a shorter travel bike that has can hold two bottles and that is lighter, mm-hmm. because I want to do some, it's kind of like a, like swoopy, rolly,
fun. You just want to do true XC racing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk, can we talk about something about my new, what bike I should get?
Yeah, I guess because this drifts away from single track six.
Okay. Because
he certainly wouldn't have this bike for single track six, right?
Okay.
He's sorry, so sad.
We'll save it.
He's so sad. we'll cover this though when you get that bike. We'll cover it there. I think that more or less covers it for the event. Thank you to the event promoters again. They were kind enough to invite us up and to cover our entry fees, which was very kind of them to do that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I am a better rider as a result of this.
I'm certain of it.
Yep. And what an incredible experience. Those trails up there are second to none so far for me. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a better rider because of the prep for it. Uh-huh. And those trails are very technical.
They are. Yeah, absolutely. Yep, pretty raw, awesome mountain biking. So if you have any questions about a stage race coming up for yourself, especially a mountain bike stage race, or any questions about training in general, you can submit them to us at trainerroad.com/podcast, and we will give it our best shot to answer it on the next episode. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.